Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Welcome to Baldly Go, the officially unofficial podcast for all the Star Trek. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Strange New Worlds, Season 2, Episode 4, Among the Lotus Eaters. Aaron, how'd you feel about this episode?
I dug it. I think it was a solid sci-fi concept. It did something interesting with the crew. I'm glad we got to see more of Captain Pike being front and center in a plot line. And had a little bit of humor with Ortega getting the blue balls on piloting the Danger Shuttle mission, and her amazing
ship. Yeah,
her amazing fur hat that she didn't get to deploy. I think this is a solid Star Trek episode. Mm-hmm. Great guest star. It's all good stuff.
Yeah, this guy looks super familiar to me. I couldn't place him.
So this guy's Reed Birney, and you're probably he's in a lot of stuff, and he plays like dad roles and whatnot, but he's probably most famous to us as the Vice President Donald Bly. He was like the super liberal representative from New Hampshire on House of Cards. That was like super all about education that Francis got on his. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The guy playing Zach also looks real familiar, but I didn't recognize him.
And he wasn't credited as like a special guest star either.
Gotcha. That makes sense. That's where I recognize him from. I'm with you. I like this episode a lot. I think the sci-fi concept is really actually pretty cool. You know, it might not be the most original thing. I've definitely seen things like this, but I liked how they used it thematically in the episode with, the connection to the emotions being the thing that like you can identify with, but also, you know, your past not being something you should jettison because it's what makes you you and it's what makes your life rich and all these things. I really appreciated that stuff.
Yeah. And I like, I was really, I'm a sucker for those like, Clark and Bradbury and, those, the stories where they would take like a recognizable human culture but change one thing, like here's mm-hmm. a society, they have multiple suns and they all are arranged to where there's never a moment of darkness, or you know, it's something like this where you've got the majority of people have no short-term memory, it's like everyone's living in Memento the movie, except mm-hmm. for the haves, the people in power that have ultimate control over the past and the future. And you know, there's a little commentary about like how that could be scary and how people could be taken advantage of if you do forget your own history.
And the apathy that comes over you. I mean, that's what the title is all about.
It's, yeah.
These lotus eaters are from Greek mythology. It's an island of people who ate this lotus flower and it would make them forget everything. And they became known for their general apathy.
Mm-hmm. Because how could, like, they make a point. It's like if you get like all worked up one day and you're ready to rebel against the people that you don't fully understand and all that, but like you're going to go to sleep and the next morning you're going to wake up and forget why it was important to fight. And
yeah, and I like that stuff with the totem, you know, the tattoos, the ways they have of sort of remembering, creating memory for themselves. I wish they would have done more with that, I guess, but they had other objectives in this. It was not to tell this extremely sci-fi nitty-gritty story.
Yeah, it's a Star Trek episode, so it's like you always want to see more, but like the world building they did, like I thought with is this guy's name Luca? Was his name?
Which the old man?
The kindly old man.
That sounds right. I just called him old man most of the time.
The progressive understanding of, you know, here's the totems and here's how we do and here's the tattoos, and the reveal that, you know, part of these tattoos work is their heraldry that like tie you to your family, and that he for some reason has inked out some of his tattoos so he can no longer read them because they were too.
Yeah.
Like that's
effectively
like,
wiped out that part of his memory.
That shit is super cool to think about. And mm-hmm. the way it kind of played out in the episode, I thought was neat.
And you had kind of a microcosm of that up on the Enterprise too, where Spock is sort of like, how do we remember who we are once we lose our memories? And I wish they would have gone a little farther with that too, but at least they were thinking about it.
Yeah. And it's one of those things, like if you're coming to me like with neuroscience, like this, like, you know, you can't have a weird exotic radiation that just zaps people's memories. Fair enough. But like, I do give Star Trek some leeway to explore some of these kind of like almost transhuman or like slightly skewed cultures. Mm-hmm. You know, if you tell me, yeah, there's some asteroid that hit 1,000 years ago that is essentially poisoning these people's brains unless they have a particular metal on their head. Yeah, I'm cool. I'm cool with that. That's
totally
tracks.
Fine. Like I don't care how it works. What I care about is how they respond to it.
Exactly. Exactly. And does the world seem like, you know, does this feel like a fully realized world? Mm-hmm. You know, with a culture that kind of like made sense, and
I think so.
Is mechanically satisfying. And it's like, you know, like it's funny because like what is it, Apple TV Plus, what show is C on, where it's Jason Momoa and everyone on Earth is blind? That's got a lot in the same ideas, but it's like it's a whole series, so they get to really explore and mm-hmm. maybe walk out on some shakier limbs than others. But like, yeah, for an hour I thought this was a pretty well-developed culture. It's also a bit of a puzzle, you know, because we know so much about Christopher Pike. Rigel 7 was one of what was known in from the old series as like a disastrous away team mission that caused them to have to evacuate a bunch of medical bunch of personnel to the Vega system. It's something that, like, you know, when and they were exploring this in like the Cage and the Menagerie episodes of Star Trek, it's like Pike was talking about how he, you know, felt bad about letting his men get ambushed that way, and he should have been more careful. So it's like we're getting to revisit some of this history and see like how it kind of unfolded. The fact that that was such a botched away team mission that they left the personnel behind with advanced Starfleet weaponry, that he's become a warlord on the planet now. Mm-hmm. I thought that was kind of fun to explore that stuff too.
Yeah, and I like thinking about those types of missions. Like, are they, I know this is kind of a clean up the mess you made sort of mission, but are those prestigious missions? Is going on a prime directive mission like high profile within Starfleet?
It has to be, but you're right. It's treated as like something embarrassing. I think first context,
in this scenario, that makes sense. Like, you guys fucked it up. Go clean it up.
Yeah. But like a first contact situation must be amongst the most prestigious things you can do.
Yeah.
Or like if you're studying like a pre-warp mm-hmm. civilization with the holographic blinds and whatnot, that's got to be seen. Because like, you know, again, that they made this point that Starfleet is an exploration organization more than anything, and that's what really gets the captain's rocks off, being those mariners, those ancient mariners exploring, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it would be. But obviously if you fucked up one and you got to go back and undo the damage, they're worshiping this. Yeah, they're worshiping your ship's insignia, your pennant flag that's a problem.
For sure.
I'm also not sure. I'd like to talk to you about how the end of the episode and whether that's a prime directive violation as well. But we can wait until we get into the episode.
I have some questions. Yeah, maybe we should do that now. Let's start with the recap.
Let's do it. Shields up. Here come the ads.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Don't just take, give with the Instax Mini 12, an analog camera with a bubbly design which comes in a range of vibrant colors. It's got a selfie mirror, close-up mode, and automatic flash control. But the coolest thing about the Instax Mini 12? As soon as you take your pick, you can give someone an instant print. Fill your world with joy with the Instax Mini 12. Find out more at instaxus.com.
At ease, Ensigns. Welcome back to Bald to Go.
We start off with Captain Patel and Pike trying to get some personal time together, but they keep getting interrupted because of their responsibilities as captains. And Patel gives Pike a gift. She realizes she's been passed up for a promotion because of the relationship, the complicated relationship she has with Pike. So Pike suggests they should pull back a little on that relationship, and Patel leaves upset.
Yeah, that rot up his ass Vulcan bastard that hates genetically engineered people seems like he's really riding Patel hard. Blocked her promotion to Commodore.
I mean, she did kind of fail in a cut and dry genetic modification, high profile genetic modification case. So I get it.
Yeah, she didn't get the successful unjust prosecution done for the Federation.
Right.
But I don't know. Like, it seems pretty shitty of Pike to, because like his whole thing is like, well, to save your career and your emotions, I'm going to break up with you.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem like it's something he wanted to do. It's like, I'm doing this. Yeah, if you're trying to make a decision to protect, like, maybe let that person look after themselves, you know?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Don't preemptively destroy something that could be good because it might not work out.
Yeah, she's not like some moony-eyed schoolgirl. She's the captain of a fucking Starfleet vessel, a judge advocate general. I think she can decide what is best for her life and her career and juggle all that stuff without Christopher Pike sparing her from it. But yes. Something that Pike learns in this episode. So what are you going to do?
He does. People make mistakes, and hopefully the best that comes of that is they realize them and fix them.
Star Trek, underrated training ground for young nerds to learn about relationships.
Sure.
I save myself a hell of a lot of cringe by paying attention to the Geordi LaForge's bullshit. I tell
and
you
Wesley
what.
Crusher. Oh, yeah.
And Wesley Crusher. Yeah, there's a lot of examples of what not to do in Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. This gift that Patel gives Pike is obviously going to come into play later in the episode, but it's an Apelian Mariner's Keystone, which is said to guide lost sailors home. I bet you were all over this conceptually.
Oh yeah,
given your interest in the seafaring genre.
I did wonder how it worked. Is it like a star map? Is it like, can you like dangle it and it like orients towards the whatever planet's Opelia's magnetic core? Is it some kind of astrolabe kind of thing where you hold it up to, and it's like, I did wonder how it actually guided those mariners home.
Seems just emotionally it guides you home. It grounds you in the things that you have at home and brings you back.
Thematically. Yeah, it does. It works mostly thematically on a metaphor level than an actual technology. But yeah, sure.
Certainly in this episode.
Uh-huh.
So Pike gets called to the bridge for briefing on Rigel 7. Or I guess the conference room, I don't know. It's a planet where they fucked up the Prime Directive, and Federation Delta symbol has been spotted there. And Enterprise has been sent to clean up their mess. Pike invites Lon and Benga and Ortegas on the mission, and they leave to go prep. And then Pike and Una talk about this whole situation with Captain Patel. She thinks that he should reconsider, but he's got to deal with this Rigel 7 stuff first.
convenient that he has a crisis where he doesn't have to think about his feelings.
Yes. Yeah, it helps. Especially one where it will directly relate to the feelings that you have and you can work through it during the mission.
Yeah. And it's funny because, like, the whole theme of this is having to clean up your own mess. And that's kind of what he does throughout, like, in his personal life and professional.
Yeah. I mean, he's the stuff with Zach. I think he feels like he's failed Zach, too, you know, by the time
literally
he's got
has.
His, yeah.
Pretty shit leaving this guy on the planet for 5 years.
Yeah. I kind of want to talk about the fate of Zach toward the end of this, but we'll get there. In the meantime, let's talk about Ortegas. She's super excited to be going on this away mission because she doesn't get to very often. Unfortunately, there's debris in orbit that requires her to stay and pilot the Enterprise by hand.
Yeah. Gotta dodge all the big rocks in orbit. It is cute because, like, you can see, like, how excited she is to get to go on an away mission. That she gets to display her skill, like, you know, she has to drive this bus essentially most of the time, and she gets to get, you know, something smaller, lighter, more agile, and like a real challenge for her, and she gets completely blocked by Pike. And I guess it's understandable, but like, I also, the way that Blasine played out, I was a little bit thinking that Pike just wanted to fly the shuttle himself. He's the old test pilot. He's the old Chuck Yeager. And if she's bored piloting the ship, he's really bored sitting in the captain's chair, and he wants to get that hand on stick and throttle going.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it happens so rarely that a captain actually gets to pilot the vessel.
That's a perfect excuse because, like, honestly, we need our best pilot piloting the Enterprise. So the hot rod thing obviously is going to go to me. You know, but the way he did it, because he kind of spun and shot her finger guns, not quite, but almost. He's just, and the way she, like, took her hat off with disgust and then had this, like, exchange with Spock, and as she walks her way, she jams that hat back on her head.
Like, well, I'm going to get a taste of it through wearing the clothes for another 10 minutes while I walk to go get changed.
It's a show of defiance. It's a defiant head covering because I'm rocking this goddamn native fur cap. I thought all of the costumes looked great. I really like Lon's. I mean, she's cosplaying as Aloy from Horizon Zero Dawn. Like, this looks like one of the fancier late game armors that you can get Aloy equipped with, right?
Totally.
Down to the hair, everything.
She just needs a bow, and yeah, it'd be perfect.
Yeah, she could have used a ranged weapon in this this thing. I also I really like that idea too. That, like, you know, why aren't they going down, like, hidden fate? Because, you know, when Riker and Troy and everybody go on their little missions, they always bring, like, a hidden phaser. They got their comms devices, but, like, Pike's like, we've screwed the pooch so hard. We are just going primitive. We're bringing our telescopes and our flint and steel and flint to start fire. Like, they're going old school, so they don't have their fabulous technology to kind of fall back on.
Yeah, what you really don't want to do on the Prime Directive cleanup mission is further screw it up.
Exactly.
Like, that's, talk about a death knell for a captain.
You come back 5 years later, they have a starbase. Like, not only did you not clean up the Delta, but now they're great. They're warp capable. Thank you. We have to let them into Federation, these fucking cavemen.
Mm-hmm. And I like the twist, too, that, you know, they're not going to take this technology, and then they turn up there and oops, the technology's already here. And the guy already knows we were coming, and we should have just brought our phasers with us, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it would have gone a hell of a lot better.
Yep. So the away team flies down to the planet while observing a meteor in a huge crater and some radiation that it's emitting. Once they land, Pike says, like you said, they're only going to use the native tech on this mission. And he also says, like, I brought you guys along because I needed fighters, not because you're doctor. And Benga's, like, really kind of peeved by that, right?
He is, like, I don't think he
wants to be that guy.
No.
That combat guy, that fighter.
He doesn't want to be a gun or a club. He wants to be a healer, and he wants to put all of those bad memories behind him, and he's visibly chafing at, it's like, he's like, oh, doesn't every doctor love their skill set as a in combat to be chosen for a landing party, you know?
It's being thrown in his face episode after episode now. Before it was he had to fight with the chapel and they had to Hulk out with the green stuff, and now he's being chosen for missions because of that experience. Yeah, I wonder what they're gonna do with him. Is this gonna come to a head at some point where he's going to have to deal with the way that people perceive him and the way he perceives himself?
I just can't believe they burned through the daughter material so fast, because this is what, more than anything, this feels like, oh shit, what do we do with our doctor? Okay, we're gonna give him a tragic past where he was this, apparently had a daughter and a teleporter and was a Klingon genetic war, you know, drug warrior. I don't like, but I'm cool with it. There is something like, you know, what do they call that? Like a cleric in D&D, where you're like half warrior and you're half healer. I think it's kind of cool. Okay. Like every party needs a guy who can do damage over time and also patch up the party. That's I think it's a kind of a neat warrior monk philosophy. I know he doesn't like it, but that's kind of interesting too. Like, is Pike gonna, at some point, is he gonna be like, look, Captain, you're triggering the shit out of me by bringing me all these rough and ready missions. I just want to...
Yeah.
And I am the chief medical officer. Stop bringing me on away team missions. But
sure.
It's a lot of Star Trek history going against him there.
Absolutely. And this is like the perfect episode to deal with the memory of his daughter, right? Like, you could do so much with that, but they just have decided to jettison that out the airlock. And I don't really know why. It was such a good hook for him, and it could still have ramifications.
It was such a good hook, and was solved by, what, the fourth episode of the show?
It was fast. It was dealt with in, like, a single episode and gone. And now even the memory of that is wiped.
The whole enchanted fairy tale episode. That would have been a great thing for them to talk about with the old man here, Lucas or whatever.
Yeah, because he's mourning the loss of his family that he doesn't remember, and like Mbenga could have been all about not losing his family or the memory of them. And what are you gonna do?
We'll see. Like I said, he's still a great character. It's just that it feels like they're clearly trying to get something going again, because they had his connection with his daughter, I thought, felt like the series long plot for him, kind of like, you know, Data trying to be human. That was going to be his deal, trying to, you know, roam the galaxy, trying to find these new life, new civilizations, trying to find cure for his daughter. And now he's just got to find peace amongst the stars,
which is also interesting.
Yeah, it's just different. It's cool. I like that they, you know, pointed out for nerds like me that even though they don't have their technology, they have subdermal universal translators, so they'll be able to read and understand in the languages even though they don't have their technology with you. And that's also, I guess, going forward, answers all questions about, like, you know, how the hell are they talking to these people when they don't have their communicators on them? Apparently they all have subdermal universal translators. That's a hell of an ability. I could use that in the 21st century.
Sure, that'd be amazing. So 6 hours later, Lon comes to her senses, having remembered nothing of that time, and they debate taking her back to the shuttle, but the sun and the temperature are about to drop before then, so they forge ahead, say we'll take her back the next day.
I like how they slowly roll this out, because I'm watching the episode, I'm like, interesting, Lon's having some kind of weird reaction to the planet. And then you hear, like, they show Mbenga having ringing in his ears. And like, oh, man, it's something on the planet. Then it's affecting everybody. And then you see it on the ship. And it's like the scope of the problem really scales, and it's paced well, where, like, I didn't see any one individual thing coming. In fact, I was, like, at first skeptical that, like, the Enterprise would be feeling this at all. And, like, when they got out of orbit, I'm like, oh, well, Spock, he's obviously taking the right step. It's neat. I like it when the Enterprise crew gets into problems where they do the smart thing and that just gets them in deeper. It reminded me of that when Picard stepped into the ancient alien draining mine situation, where it's like, you know, no matter what they did to get out of it, it just made it harder to get out. So there's, like, it's a classic Star Trek plot, but no one has to be idiot to make it to make the episode unwind, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say, you know, Spock was maybe not as smart as I expected him to be in this scenario with his logic and his powers of deduction and reasoning, but We'll talk about that in a bit. The thing I like about how this episode unspools is by the time the Enterprise, you realize that it's affecting the Enterprise crew, you also realize the effects of the thing itself, that they're going to lose their memory and not even know who they are, what mission right. they're on. The yeah. captains and his crew are going to be stuck on the planet. Like,
it's terrifying.
You realize the stakes and then you see them having the effects and you're going, oh no.
Right.
How are they going to get around this? They reach the castle and they're surveying it. They're coming up with a plan. Unfortunately, they're spotted and captured before they can set up camp. Their captors know that they're from Starfleet, which is interesting. They probably spotted the captain just standing straight up with his stupid telescope. I know later they tell us it's, you know, it's about the streak in the sky, the shuttlecraft, but like he's just standing full, like on the ridge, straight up. Everybody else
not
is ducked behind rocks.
World.
Yeah.
Silhouetted on a ridgeline. What's he doing?
What is he doing? And they're taken before the king, who is named Zach. He's one of the people that they thought was killed in the previous bungling Prime Directive mission. Turns out he was not killed, and they left him there. He explains that the radiation on the planet causes you to forget everything you know, and says he's going to enjoy watching them suffer with that like he did.
I like when La'an says, are we supposed to know this guy? Because I was actually thinking that myself. Like, God, was this a season one mission? Because obviously this is something the Enterprise did before. This is something they did way before. This mission mm-hmm. canonically takes place like 5 years ago. But so when La'an said that, I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm not supposed, this wasn't some season one plot that I just completely forgot about. But yeah. Yeah, I think it's interesting. I do wonder, like, how many phaser rifles did he have? Can you cow an entire civilization with the phaser rifles and the shots that they have on them of, like, a case, which I think maybe has, what, between 6 and 12? I guess. You could probably cow a pre-warp civilization with 12 phaser rifles for 5 years?
Yeah.
Like, how many people do you got to disintegrate after you disintegrate the first one before people stop trying you, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of questions around Zach's appearance here and his becoming king in this scenario. Like, okay, Starfleet wasn't supposed to be there. They got in a mm-hmm. firefight and some mm-hmm. people were left behind. They make it clear that the memory thing was already in effect at that point. How did Zach maintain his memory or regain his memory or whatever long enough to actually take over and make himself king here?
It is. I would look, because like I thought about this a little bit and I'm like, well, okay, so they had this fight with like essentially wizards. They're throwing energy balls at them and okay. they get one lone guy captured. Certainly they'd bring him to the fortress, right? Like the high mucky mucks would want to talk
yeah.
to this guy once he's in the fortress. But like if I was one of those high mucky mucks, I would probably build cells. But mm-hmm. on the other hand, you want to interrogate them. So like there's like a push-pull between being afraid of what they can do if they get their memories back versus getting useful information out of them at all. So I'm guessing, but like, yeah, like to explicitly answer your question, like how does one Starfleet officer who is wounded
mm-hmm.
nurse himself back to health and from some kind of custody of the Kalar get his case of phaser rifles to where he can, because like once he got the phaser rifles, then I could start putting the pieces together. But yeah,
yeah.
I don't know that there's a good explanation. They might be wise to just kind of yada yada through it. It's like, well, he's been sitting on a throne for 5 years, so what are you going to do? You know,
sure. And I can come up with any number of scenarios how that might happen. Yeah. And it's probably yeah, smart that they don't try and explain that in dialogue, but. I am curious. I would like to know.
We might revisit this later because there's still the question of what Starfleet's going to do to Zach. And
yes.
like, I think what Starfleet does to Zach probably depends on exactly how he's found himself as the High Lord of the Kalar.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. There are better and worse ways to become king. So Pike then comes to in a cage. We have another.
Oh, can I also say that I really admired the way they set up this asteroid in the crater when they're coming in, you know, and they're like establishing that this is half a hemisphere away. So it's close enough that they can affect them, but also, you know, it's not like something people have firsthand. I thought that, yeah, like they put all these pieces and Pike and crew is observing them like, oh, wow, this is a big crater. And oh, it has a debris field in space. And it's like all they're establishing all these pieces. So when they all come together, I thought it made a lot of sense. And you felt clever kind of like discovering all this stuff with the crew rather than having a spoon fed out to you later in the episode, just in time for you to need it.
Yes. No, it's a very well constructed episode. Pike comes to in a cage with the others, but they don't remember what their mission is or even who they are by the time this scene is ended. I don't know if you want to talk about anything there.
No, it's he gets a, they all give a good performance of like a person whose memory is fleeing them as they're speaking. Like he's talking about Zach, but then can't remember Zach's name, and then a sentence later can't even remember who he was talking about and why. And it's like they're all, and you can see them getting like progressively afraid and like angry. You know, there's a lot of like patients in a dementia ward to this, where it's like, you know, when you take away a person's personhood, it makes them, they're like the default emotion seems to be like fear and anger.
Sure.
Which makes a lot of sense, you know?
Yeah.
You find yourself in that situation. Like, why is someone fucking with me? Right?
Right. Yeah. So Uhura is experiencing the same time loss and confusion up on the Enterprise. So she's sent to sick bay. Nurse Chapel's concerned. She gets to work troubleshooting. Apparently, it'll be fine as long as it doesn't spread past Uhura. But just then, six more people come down with symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
I like this scene a lot.
Interesting that Ortega is crucial for keeping the Enterprise safe as the pilot, but the commander has her assist Uhura down to the sick bay, even though this is evidence. I think Pike is just wanting to take a joyride.
So here's what I think happened with that. I think there is a debris field that is a certain distance from the planet. They needed her to pilot them past it. And then,
but he says to maintain orbit.
Yeah. And that doesn't make a lot of sense given that they're in orbit now, and she could have piloted the shuttle down if they were inside the debris field.
That's what I'm saying. I think there's little clues that Pike is just kind of like, holding her back a bit for his own selfish. He's not a monster. This is not like some kind of crazy mutiny on the bounty situation. It's just a little bit of a dick. I feel like he wanted to. He's like, hey, I haven't even been in the first three episodes, okay? I'm fucking taking his shuttle down, and I'm gonna lose my
memory.
And she's
like, "Hey, I haven't gotten any character development in a whole season. Give me a break."
He's like, "Yeah, I'm the star of the show. I want. I'm sorry. I need a. I need an A plot at least every four episodes. Okay."
Yeah, I'll get you next time.
Yeah.
Promise.
Yeah, we'll get you on Letterkenny to make it up for you.
Sure. I like the stuff that is going on with Uhura here. She's kind of out of it because of the drugs and her memory loss, and they ask her, you know, what did you have to eat? She's like, oh, the same thing I have every day, oatmeal. They're wondering if it could have been something there. And then six more people come down with it. She's like, definitely not the oatmeal.
And her, again, like, it's like it's all building, right? It's like, oh, it's spread, and oh, how it's like it will be anybody. And it's the stakes keep building nicely. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yes, they do. And with how fast they show it happening, I think is one of the points of tension here, because they don't have really much time at all.
Right.
Let's go back down to the planet. Pike and company have a rough forgetting, and we're just kind of getting introduced to all these concepts here as this old man helps them through the process, tells them just, okay, follow me to the work camp. We'll get you through this. And as they work, the old man explains that they forget who they are each night, and they have a totem and some tattoos to help them remember things, and explains that, you know, the deeply learned things, the deeply known things, the emotional things you don't forget. It's really just the learned, the remembered things that you do. And Pike and crew notice that they have no tattoos or work calluses, so they realize they don't belong here, and they attack the guards and they get free, and Lon is sliced open in the process.
Yeah.
And Binga thinks he can help her if they can find a place to hide, so the old man says, yeah, let's go.
Yeah, I like this again, there's a lot of world building here. I like when Anson Mount looks directly at the camera and says, ladies and gentlemen, have you ever considered how soft and supple my hands are? And there's just like this mystery they're trying to solve, you know? It's like, well, if we are Kalar, where are tattoos? Why don't we have work calluses? And it makes sense. Like, you know, essentially this is a Memento planet, and they're solving the problem the same way the guy in Memento did. You know, they're tattooing their body to remind them, like, you know, this is my name. Oh, my name is on my house. And, oh God, where am I? Oh, there's a pillar here, and explains the whole story. It's like, and it's, I guess this is all kind of cribbed together from best practices of, like, if you are caring with someone who has, like, really severe dementia or short-term memory loss. There's a guy following TikTok where his dad has pretty advanced dementia, and he's always confused all the time, and he gets like, he's essentially runs like multiple times a day his dad's status reports, like, you know, hey, you're fine, dad, you're just old, you're living with me, I'm your son, your other son's gonna come over, we're gonna have lunch at that one place you like, you just like essentially like just help them and that's all they need, and it's like, oh, he's gonna be fine for another hour and a half. But like this kind of like, you know, ways to ground you in a very unhuman way to live, right? Like they're unstuck from time. Every day is exactly the same as the next day for these people. I thought that was really cool and to continue to be well developed.
And I really like the difference in perspective here between the people who are new to this and the people who've been through it so many times before, this old man, because they feel like there is a mystery to solve here and that something isn't right. The crew does. Because look at my hands. They don't match the scenario we're in. What's going on? And their curiosity is sort of taking control here. The Lotus Eater, the, you know, proverbial Lotus Eater here, this old man, is extremely apathetic to that. He's like, oh, there might be a mystery here, but it doesn't matter because tomorrow you're going to forget it. And if you decide to do something about it, it's going to be too late anyway. So yeah, let's just... we have our lot in life. Let's just follow this path that's been laid out for us. By who, we don't know, because that's the thing about the tattoos and the totem. You can never trust them. You don't know if you put the tattoos on your body. You don't know if you made the totem.
No. It's extreme.
It could be someone messing with you, right?
Like the people on top have complete control, not over just what is said in history books, but over your own memory, like what happened yesterday.
Yeah, they're over who you are. They can. Yeah. They could tell you who you are on any given day.
They could add something to that totem tomorrow and tell you it's been there for 1,000 years, and how would you ever know?
Right.
And there is this,
and
like,
the apathy and the sort of like the desire that seeps out of you, that just kind of is drained from you to do anything beyond what is told to you to do, I think would be very real.
Right, because you lose, like, you know, you heal the mission, the emotions. You might know something happened that makes you angry or something happened to make you sad, but, like, you know, the motivation is, like, the specific things, you know? Like, people do not get up in arms, sad to say, when they're confronted with the reality that child slave labor is used to make some of our products in society. Like, you know, we take that in stride. If your child was enslaved to make Nikes, it would be a big fucking deal, because you got to. So it's like there's like that element where they're controlled just by.
Do you point your anger? Like, I feel angry. I should be mad at somebody. Who?
Right.
Who and why?
And then like, what? How is it possible productive? Because you can't organize. You can't plot. Mm-hmm. You can't. You can't communicate. Even if you could, like, get ahead of steam, you go to sleep, and the next morning you try to like explain to, you know, the next. You know, so you conquer this labor camp. You're planning to go to tomorrow. How would you do that? How would you, like, even if you can keep the gumption together till the next day? And it's like the way to retake a labor camp is just a wait. Like, if I'm the guys wearing helmets, I just wait for them to go to sleep and then come in the next day like nothing ever happened.
Send them back.
Get up. Time to go back into the mines. Like, they completely. It's like, it's such a sweet deal for the oppressor class.
Yeah. The only rebellion you can form has to take place within what, a 24 to 48 hour window, as long as you can stay awake, I guess. The only culture you have is the culture you can develop within a day, essentially. It's kind of a fascinating scenario.
Yeah, it's the ultimate
way they portray it.
They who control the past, the control the present, and shape the future. Like it's literally a part of their.
It's a Rage Against the Machine song.
It's part of their understood culture. Like, oh well, of course the people in the castle, they're the ones that worry about the future and the past. We don't have to. We're unburdened. You know, it's a great thing. Oh, I feel sorry for those guys at the castle having to worry about things. It's
they have the burden of fucking maintaining their memories for us.
Exactly,
it's a responsibility.
And that's the thing, is like we hear that, like this, like you know, you hear that all the time in, you know, like some of the like every once in a while we'll lapse back in that medieval betters talk, like, oh, you know, oh, those people that have all the money and the power. Jesus. And like how heavy the brow that wears the crown. Like we have all these sayings about how rough it is to be in the leadership, how rough it is to be up top. Mm-hmm. And like who benefits from that tale, you know? Mm-hmm. Why do we tell it to ourselves? it's fascinating to think about how this stuff applies in terms of controlling history, trying to fight history, trying to wrestle with who gets to explain history.
And I don't know how explicit,
super powerful, which is why people spend so much political capital fighting over it.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how explicit they're trying to go with this, because the obvious other commentary they're making here is about people who forget the past are destined to repeat it. Yeah. That sort of thing. I didn't sense a lot of that in this episode, but that's mm-hmm. definitely something I was thinking about.
Yeah, it's very there's the commentary there, but it's a light touch. One of the lighter touches we've had in these commentary episodes.
Yeah, this is a much more personal view of the memory mm-hmm. thing, and I think that was warranted given, you know, where Battelle and Pykar and Benga and all that. So, all right, let's talk about Chapel explaining to Una what's going on with the crew's memory loss while Una herself is experiencing symptoms. She kind of, you know, excuses herself to sickbay here, leaves Spock in charge. He hands out some tablets with the crew's personal information on it. They're talking about how the source of this problem might be the radiation on Rigel 7, this weird radiation they've detected. Spock takes command and orders Ortegas to take them into the Bree field for its radiation shielding, which is a tricky bit of piloting, we should note.
Is this also the worst thing you can do? Like, he's doing, but like, because we find out later that these weird minerals are the thing causing the radiation, correct?
Mm-hmm.
But it does both, because the fortress made from the meteor ore and the helmets block the radiation. So onto something? Or
I think what it is, yeah, is they just need to get out past the debris field because that's what's blocking the radiation. I don't think the debris field itself is creating the radiation. I think it's just the meteorite.
So there's one particular meteorite that's radioactive.
I think so.
Okay, because I was start to be like, huh. I thought that like the whole asteroid field is full of brain scrambling radiation.
That would be a problem.
But then also like, but also that was the solution to it too. So yeah, I think you're right. There's this like maybe one.
Yeah. And you need it. What I said about the symptoms coming on very quickly earlier is important because you need that to happen before Spock can really come up with the idea for the shield modulation and filtering all that radiation out through the shields. I think that made a lot of sense at the end of the episode after they've had time to think about it and gotten away from that radiation. But in the moment, it just happened so fast. It took down this ship in a matter of a couple hours, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at Spock's actions here and I'm going, okay, well, he's trying to play it kind of smart. He's thought about this for a second. Once we lose our memories, we're not going to know who we are. So maybe I can remind us with these data pads. I think the hilarious thing is when they come to not remembering who they are, Spock can't even read the freaking pad. And I don't know if that's a universal thing, if that's like nobody can read, but then why can they talk? I feel like those are such intrinsically connected things that
especially
they understand
Kalar
language,
read.
Just not reading.
Are they trying to suggest that like Spock's native tongue is Vulcan, so that like, and he learned, but like his mom's Earth, Terran, she wouldn't, Spock wouldn't learn how to speak Earth English, whatever the fuck, new Terran,
basic
before like early enough that it wouldn't be considered like one of his core skills.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, if they were going for that. But also, Ortegas can't. She doesn't know who she is, and she's got the pad in front of her, too. So
you're right.
I don't think anybody can read, but I think they obviously can speak. I mean, that's self-evident.
Huh. I wonder why the Kalar can still read their glyphs.
Oh.
Because, like, that's whole how it all works. They're tattoos, and they get up and they read. Now, I guess it's hieroglyphics, but still, like, that's not literally just picture, like a picture book. You have to be able to interpret and get that the idea, you know. So it's like, I can't, that I thought that was weird, and you're right pointing out, because I was like, well, maybe Ortega didn't get one, because he's like, we need to pass this out to the command staff, but he did give her right?
Yeah, she gets one from Spock. Maybe she just didn't look at it, because she was kind of freaking out when she
was
realized
she was
had
having
memory.
An intense and emotional reaction, but whereas Spock is the one that in particular said, but it doesn't seem like it helped anybody, because Chapel is out wandering,
right.
You know, she was given one, like, this thing that Spock did had no effect for whatever reason.
And that's the thing, when I'm Spock, I'm thinking, okay, what are the important things here? Well, we've got the captain down on the planet, that we need to get him back, we need to remember to get him back. Mm-hmm. Spock has no plan for that. He has no plan for what happens when they forget their mission. Mm-mm. Because that's the number one thing they're going to do. And when he orders Ortegas to take them through the debris field, which is a dangerous act, tricky piloting involved, he needs a way to tell Ortegas what her active mission is. Because otherwise, the Enterprise could be doomed. That's where I'm like, look, Spock is supposed to be this bastion of logic, right? Mm-hmm. Why is he not thinking through the actual pieces of information they will definitely need when they lose their memories?
I guess it's like something that's brand new to science, and you're trying to figure out, like, you don't even know how this is all going to work, and you're trying to come up with contingency plans while it's ravaging your memory. But
I mean,
he could
tell the computer, he could whip up a program, computer, in exactly 1 hour. And every hour on the hour, remind us of our current mission and run down, like, positions on the ship or something.
I gotta say, the real surprise is how unhelpful the computer of the USS Enterprise is in this situation. Like, apparently,
computer, get us out of here.
Apparently, if the pilots of this thing were incapacitated, a crewman with the correct command codes couldn't just be like, computer, get me the fuck out of here. Uh-huh. Whatever, best possible, safest course and speed. And the Enterprise would be like, fuck you, find Ortega. I don't know how to do that. Right. I don't got thumbs. I can't work this steering wheel. Like, that was wild to me.
Yeah, the level of automation is always perplexing in Star Trek, but I agree.
Yeah.
A couple of perplexing things.
They needed a cybernetic AI war to go along with the eugenics so they can explain the lack of automation on Star, like the amount of firewalling between basic ship functions and the computer.
Well, they have one just, you know, 100 years later or whatever with Picard season one.
True.
Yeah.
What does he do in season one?
It's the whole thing with Soji and the androids and
they're all outlawed
too. So
gotcha.
Yeah. Let's talk about a scene that maybe makes a lot more sense and I like more. The old man takes Pike's team to his house. Lon needs medical treatment, and the old man tells them, "Nah, just let her die. We'll feel okay about it tomorrow." He shows him the totem, which tells them about the two class systems on the planet and how the class that lives in the palace holds their memories in a casket, I guess. And when Pike pleads with him to help them get Mbenga's memories back so he can save Lon, the old man agrees due to the strength of Pike's conviction. And that is the part of this scene that I like the most. Mm-hmm. This idea that emotion is the only thing that resonates with these people because it's the only thing that they have a firm grasp on day to day. And so conviction becomes the thing that leads them, that forges paths for them. Like, well, if this person feels that strongly about it, there must be something there. If this is their moment, right?
And it's so, because like in the previous scene where they assaulted the guards, and you look at like how oddly passive the Kalar are about, like everyone in the background is just kind of standing and just like they're not reacting in horror. They're just kind of like observing it. But they're passive to it. They're like empty vessels. So it's easy to fill them with another purpose, you know, because like he's like, well, I mean, obviously you guys are passionate about it. And like there's like something like in their society, in the field Kalar society, that if there's somebody worked up about something, they must have a good reason, so we should just go along with it.
Because
it's like also really cold but logical how he's just like, yeah, just let her die. You just, you're making this, you know, let her spend her last moments in peace. And they're like, how can you? She's like, I'm not dead yet. And they're like, how could you be this callous? But from his perspective, it's like, look, we're going to go to sleep and this will all be over. We won't even remember this. It's I like how they really committed to that culturally. And he's just completely unbothered by it.
Yeah. No, it's yeah, that's the thing I like about this is the interesting way they live because of the affliction.
There's a little bit of like there's I mean, the terminology they're using where they have like it's not literally house Kalar and field Kalar, but it's like castle Kalar and house and field Kalar. I feel like there's a little bit of racial commentary there too.
Yeah.
In terms of like, you know, the keeping your slaves illiterate as a way to control them
and culturalists. Yeah.
Erase their culture and their history to where, you know, they don't know where they came from, their traditions and even their family lines. Like there's a, I feel like there's a lot of the stuff that they're hinting at with that as well. But honestly, it's just like, you know, the ultimate form of control over a population you're keeping down. It's a it's a old playbook.
For sure. All right, the crew, Pike's crew, drags Lon outside the palace and leaves her there with the old man while they head inside to get their memories. The old man says,
"Did we talk about the legend?
I don't want him." Huh?
Did we talk about the legend that they're that the Kalar keep the memory stored in like a casket?
I mentioned it, but not. You want to go into detail?
Okay. Yeah. No, I just thought that was an interesting tidbit. Like, you know, their lore building, like they don't understand any of this works, but they got this like child's understanding of it. Like Zach mocks Pike for demanding to know where the casket of his memories are. It's like, are you an idiot? You know?
Yeah.
But
yeah, he's an idiot. You keep your people that way. What do you expect?
Like, yeah. And it's interesting to see like Pike, who's got a man who knows so much, like he's got so much of understanding of how the universe works, and he's down to like believing in a fairy tale, because why wouldn't he? You know, all he has got is the information that he can act on. But the whole idea of like the old man, I don't want my memories, and revealing that he has blacked out some of his tattoos. He doesn't know why. He doesn't know what that used to be. Could be children. Could have been. But like, he just knows that that was something so painful that forgetting in a uniquely Kalar way was a better fate than dealing with the pain. I thought that was really sad. But especially sad because like he doesn't even know what he was missing.
Yeah.
He's just like going like, well, I assume old me thought this was better, so why would I bother myself second guessing? And it also didn't give him much peace because he still just has all this overwhelming sadness and no reason why. He's got this longing, this missing, and this sadness, but he doesn't know why. But knowing is better than knowing.
Yeah, he says knowing won't ease my sorrow, knowing the story. And on one hand, I agree with that. On the other hand, are you sure about that? Because you don't know the story. And if you don't know the story, maybe the memory of those people would be something also comforting. You know, right now you have a general sadness. What if there's some joy to be had within that? Even if it's just a morsel within, you know, that general sadness, it might be worth having. I think by the end of the episode, we're going to get around to that, right? Obviously.
But he says, like, I'm just too afraid of the pain. Like, I know what I'm experiencing right now, and I'm dealing with it. Every day I get through it. And, like, knowing, you know, obviously some version of me didn't want to know. And now I don't. So that's it's like, again, this passivity, this extreme passivity.
Uh-huh. And he commends them for the courage that it takes to face the the stories, the fears.
You wonder how many more weeks like you hold Pike and La'an and Binga like this before they completely become passive. Because there's enough residual, like, there's a mystery here. I don't have calluses, but like the second their hands get calloused, the second that like they start forming relationships with the other Kalar, so they're unique. That's the other thing that stood up is like we feel uniquely attached in a way that like I don't feel towards anybody else. Like a couple weeks and, you know, they probably would forget as effectively as this guy.
Yeah. Red alert. Here comes an ad break.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at IKEA-USA.com today.
Refresh the summer vibes with Tic Tac and you could win a Lollapalooza VIP experience in Chicago. Visit TicTacSummer.com for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Open to legal residents of 50 U.S. states and D.C. 18 plus. Ends June 30th, 2024. Void in PR and where prohibited. See TicTacSummer.com for rules and free entry without UPC.
The Dine Under menu is here for a limited time at Outback Steakhouse. Get an 18-ounce bone-in ribeye and our signature blend of 17 spices, Kingsland pasta, or juicy sirloin and lobster mac starting at just $16.99. That's better than the actual Outback, where even if you caught dinner, you know deep down you couldn't do what needs to be done. Run free, little buddy. Run free. The Dine Under menu. It's better than the actual Outback. Starting at $16.99 for a limited time at Outback Steakhouse. Outback. No rules, just right.
Let's boldly go back to the episode. Welcome back to Baldly Go. So like I said, they drag Lon. We kind of talked about that scene, but let's move back to the Enterprise, I guess. We were on board the Enterprise. The last of the bridge crew, Spock and Ortegas, lose their memories. Ortegas needs to find someplace safe, so she runs off. She encounters a hall full of people with no memory and uses the computer to guide her home. Though I think she ends up in Pike's quarters, if you're paying attention. They show the models of the Enterprise, the golden models of the Enterprise in that quarters. And I'm pretty
sure...
But
why would the ship take her to his quarters?
I think she takes
hers.
A wrong turn.
Oh, because it tells her, like, you're supposed to turn this way instead of that?
I think
so. But why
so.
Would she say it feels safe? Oh, because he entertains them there.
Yeah, he's a rock, right? He's like, yeah.
And he has them to his quarters to cook meals and stuff on a pretty regular basis. Or is that a separate facility? Is that like an officer's mess?
I think that's his quarters.
I thought so, too. Okay, I didn't get that joke.
He's the only person with a full kitchen in his quarters, right?
I didn't get that joke.
I think that's true. Unless she also has... Golden Enterprises in her.
She has multiple.
Cabin,
there's multiple Enterprises, or just the one? Was it multiple?
I think there's one Enterprise, and then there's something. There's another ship next to it.
Okay, so that probably is then. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah. She. With no pilot, obviously the Enterprise starts smacking into some rocks, and Ortegas is super scared. And we'll kind of get the continuation of this here in a minute.
I tell you what, we've come a long way since the days of TNG where you had black felt with glitter glued to it as a star field in the background. Like seeing the asteroid field smash in and the shields absorb it. That was fucking cool. And her just like, make it stop, fucking make it stop. And the computer had, which is also, did you notice the computer's doing a pretty good Majel Barrett impersonation?
Yeah. Yeah, not bad.
Yeah, I like that they're trying, but like the computer's like, hey, you're on your own, kid. But I was like, we never saw that shit outside this Enterprise windows. It just makes it look so much cooler and more real.
Yes, I agree. It definitely bumps up the visuals a notch in the immersion, I guess. The other thing I noticed is like the Enterprise's computer. Yes, it's not crazy helpful in this scenario, but it will at least tell you who you are. identify you and let you know what your responsibilities are. And it's sort of like the Enterprise's totem in this case, right?
You think it could do a better job of that. Like, you know, hey, computer, we're all losing our memories. You need to be extra, like, on, you know, like respond to voice commands. But like, it's something. Like, the computer should be at least as smart as ChatGPT. I don't feel like this computer is.
If I start freaking out, remind me who I am and what my duties are.
Exactly. Have some cliff notes on navigating the ship at my duty station.
Then Pike and Mbinga fight the guards at the palace gates. Mbinga stays to hold them off while Pike runs inside to get their memories out the casket.
He gets lightly phasered in the leg.
I like this detail. So at the beginning of this scene, Pike is kind of like losing his touch with reality again, right? He's got the headaches and stuff. And Mbinga's over there fighting. And I'm not convinced that Pike knows what's going on in the moment. He just kind of sees Mbinga getting attacked and jumps in. And so by the end of the scene, like, he's back on mission, but I feel like there's a moment where he almost loses the mission.
Yeah. There's a lot of great, like, memento, you know, like that memento scene where Lenny's running and he's like, I'm running. What am I running? Oh, there's a guy. Am I chasing him? And he starts chasing him. And then the guy shoots at him. Like, oh shit. No, I'm running from him. Like, there's like this idea, like, you can't even in the middle of doing something, keep a thread of it.
Yeah. We go back to the Enterprise. Ortega asks the computer for help and finds out she flies the ship. I fly the ship. She realizes it's up to her to get them out of this horrible place. So she heads back to the bridge, sits at her console, and pilots the ship entirely on feel. There's a cute moment between her and Spock here.
She gasses herself up like, I fly the ship. And then she goes up and does it with Spock. And Spock looks at her and is like, yes, you are the pilot. I believe in you. And it's funny because, like, I think it's interesting, like, Spock, when you strip away everything and all he's left is, like, his core motor skills and his emotion, like, how un-Vulcan that is, right? Because, like, he doesn't have his higher thought. He just has his emotions, and what a weird thing for a Vulcan to be left with, you know?
I wanted his log at the end of this, right? Like, I like Ortega's log.
Agreed.
But what was he thinking in that moment?
Because he seems like the most kind of buttoned down and kind of like, because he doesn't know what to do. He's very, like, but now this woman comes in and says she's the pilot, and he's like, fuck yeah, you're the pilot. It was, like you said, it's cute.
Yeah. Pike reaches the throne room where he subdues Zach and demands their memories back. And Zach tries to explain the memory casket is a myth. We'll kind of see more of this. These scenes are pretty intercut. So let's shelve that for a second. Go back to Ortega's threading the needle, which is an interesting maneuver. No time to veer off. We're headed for this rock. So let's fire all phasers and barrel roll the Enterprise for some reason. I don't know why you got to do that. But sure. It looked cool.
Yeah, you weaken a large asteroid with your phaser and then punch a hole through it. Like, I was kind of skeptical. Like, that's really easier than just slowing down and pulling up or using your tractor beam. Like, I got to go through. But it looked cool.
Right. And that was the whole point. So then let's go back to the throne room here. Zach tries to tell Pike the truth about the radiation and the ore that protects the planet from memory loss. Pike doesn't believe him. He's hell-bent on finding their memories and starts trying to beat the truth out of Zach. He's about to kill him when he's been inside the palace long enough that his memories are returning, and they're just in time to stop him from killing Zach. And so he apologizes to Zach and says, we're bringing you home. I got no idea what Starfleet's going to do with you.
So Pike says... Zach says Rigel changes people because, like, you know, Pike is like on the verge of beating him to death and then killing him with a phaser. And Pike's like, nah, it shows us who we really are. What do we find out about Pike? Because at the end, he's like cruelly beating Zach. Now, Zach is taunting him and he's bringing it on himself as some kind of like self-flagellation. But like, is Pike a cruel bully at the end of the day? Or
so that was my initial thought. I think what they're getting at is that Pike will do anything to save his crew. He cares so much about them that that is the overriding factor.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So he'll beat a person to death because he thinks it's going to save his crew.
And the thing that he lost here is the inhibitions, the things that he's learned about not killing people and all that stuff that through the Federation and Starfleet. But the core is he will do anything to protect his crew.
Yeah. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. That
it makes more sense than I'm a monster who will murder people with the drop of a hat.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah,
I agree. Because I was very confused
too. I'll torture innocents and all that kind of stuff. No, that makes a lot of sense. And then like the dichotomy there of like he's doing his highest purpose by trying to save his crew, but the reason he's in this jam is because he did a shit job of saving and looking after his crew.
Yeah. Very true.
Because obviously Zach's really bitter about this. The fact that that's the thing. It's like, so he's a yeoman, low ranking. He's not a high ranking Starfleet officer. He's on a way team mission that goes pear shaped. It's a running gun. There's a running battle. People are getting killed. People are getting wounded. He goes down in an attack and then his ship just fucks off and leaves him there. And then he loses his memory. And then he ends up being the warlord of the planet. But like, I guess I'm trying to get at, what do you think Starfleet makes of this Prime Directive violation? Can you even hold him responsible for the things he did until he got his memory back? And then how do you hold him responsible?
So you're saying the most egregious Prime Directive violation is Zach establishing himself as king. Like, you had the equipment that was left there. Yes, you had the Starfleet officers and the insignias and all that. But the real problem was Zach made himself king.
And stayed there? Because I guess what I'm asking is, like, what does Starfleet expect from a Starfleet officer? Would a Starfleet expect for you to grab all the phaser rifles, set them to overload, and blow yourself up? Like, is the Prime Directive so important? Because I kind of think you could argue it is. Mm-hmm. Like...
Or don't have to kill yourself necessarily. You could integrate in their society, but as one of them, you can't, right? You can probably live your life amongst them, just never letting them know you're from another planet.
But there's some things that are like, you know, I guess it's like, you know, the reason Spock goes into the Enterprise's reactor in Wrath of Khan is because he knows his individual life is not worth the hundreds of crew members are going to die, certainly, if he doesn't, right? And he's the only one that can.
It's really about Kirk. but you're right. You're absolutely right.
I could see, or it's like, you know, if you're in a Chernobyl situation and you can be the guy who stops the meltdown, but it's going to lead to your death. It's like, it's not like that is an order, a standing order, but it's kind of expectation that you should. And I wonder if Starfleet takes it seriously. It's that they're going to be like, look, you should have done more heroic measures to keep this civilization from being fucked over.
Pike expresses
but
that
the memory
general
loss
idea, right?
Is like, you've already done the damage by the time you figure out, like, so, you know, like he could have done a lot of this just being in a haze of memories and feelings, and then he becomes the warlord because of this fantastic technology and then remembers everything that happens. And now what?
That's the thing. If they hadn't been already compromised, if the Prime Directive hadn't been blown already, you could hold Zach more responsible. But I mean, they've got all the equipment. They just had a battle with Starfleet. Like, they know what's up here. Zach can't deny it.
Mm-hmm.
So he just needs to live a life there, and he just chose to live as king. I mean, it almost sounds, by the way Zach describes it, that it wasn't necessarily his idea. Because he talks about how they made this my symbol, you know, this Delta thing. And I get the impression that when he says that, he's talking about, like, they started to worship me before I had any aspirations to be king. Yeah.
Probably, but some point in five, at some point in 5 years, you could have had there had to be an exit point or something. I don't know. And I look at, like, that Vulcan judge who seems like he would be a really uncompromising guy. And I'm like, I don't see how he talk. Because the other thing is, like, I do feel like it's a choice between what he did and death. Because, like, you said, well, if you go and hide out amongst the population, well, are you going to hide out amongst the fortress population? What if they don't accept you? What if they kick? Because, like, once you're out of the castle, what you want to do and your plans don't fucking matter.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it seems like killing yourself and the technology is the only way to somewhat put them on the path of the Prime Directive. But I'm curious to see if they follow up with this, because it does seem like it's a no-win
scenario. Here's what you do. This is an easy solution. Well, it works as long as the radiation stays there. You become king, and one at a time, you send each of the people who know about you out into the fields. And over time, eventually everyone has forgotten you, and you just live the solitary life in the castle. Blow up the castle, whatever.
Yeah, it's true. You could destroy the castle, and then everybody's in the same boat.
I mean, this planet has a built-in mechanism for fixing the Prime Directive mistake, right?
True. Well, so next question. Mm-hmm. I don't know about Pike's logic that this is a non-natural development of a civilization. Yes.
This is horseshit.
Yeah, like, okay, well then what unnatural process caused that asteroid to crash into the planet?
If this was thrown by the Romulans or something at the planet intentionally, sure.
Yes.
This
that
is
would
an
make
astronomical
a lot
event,
sense.
Man. That, like, and you can say the formation of our moon was unnatural by these definitions, right? Like,
well, I was just thinking, like, if the Romulans were around 67 million years ago and were, like, sympathetic to the dinosaur civilization, it's like, it's Chicxulub, I don't know if we need to let this smack the Earth, because mm-hmm. it's not like, what the fuck? We took over this planet in large part because of that asteroid smacked into it. So, like,
yeah, that's crazy talk.
Yeah.
I almost thought there was a wink and a nod between him and Spock, where Spock realized this is absolutely not logical, but I'm going to sanction it because you're the captain.
The thing is like, that's why being in a Federation is hard, because, like, this is not it's a natural result, but it is not it's not just. And it's hard to see how you would build a just society from the parts of this. So maybe you're condemning the Kalar to, you know, having this a permanent leader caste versus worker caste. But also that's a way a lot of societies develop naturally.
And they left planets, like, in that scenario before, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. It's very much like in Star Trek IV, where, you know, Scotty gives away the formula for transparent aluminum. Like, well, how do we know this guy didn't invent it? I was like, I fucking don't know.
Bullshit,
Scott. Maybe there,
man.
You could ask the ship's computer. Maybe you could do some research.
Right.
Maybe you shouldn't fucking play devil's dice at the timeline like that. But this is a funny Star Trek movie, so no one cares. It's like, for a fairly serious episode up to that point, it was a weird kind of like, fuck the Prime Directive.
Yeah, which makes you wonder, like, maybe that's how Pike gets into this sort of stuff with Prime Directive cleanup missions that the Enterprise caused. He plays fast and loose with those rules, and suddenly you're in this scenario.
Well, if Star Trek is anything like it used to be, they're going to be an episode where you actually get the firsthand knowledge of how bad things can get when you fuck up the Prime Directive.
Yep.
You know, maybe we're not done with Rigel 7 either.
Possible. Let's go to kind of the aftermath of all this. And Binga patches up Lon with the Federation tools they found in the palace. Old man has remembered his past, and he's weeping. It's very sad. He thanks Pike for giving him his memory of his family, though. And Pike says, I got someone to apologize to.
I like that. Luca's like, you know, that's the thing about taking this deal that you don't know the full knowledge of, right? Because now that he knows, he's like, I was wrong. All Kalar should remember. But how could you ever be qualified to make that judgment in any previous point in your life, you know?
Yeah. You can't remember what you've lost.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know.
Yeah.
And there's some commentary from Mbenga here about how it'd be nice maybe to not remember your past for a while. And I think Lon agrees with that. And sure, I think everybody feels that from time to time.
Yeah, especially these people that have been through traumatic experiences, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And the people who, you know, are not just experiencing the emotions based on past events, but experiencing the effects of those events actively.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Bing is being chosen for roles that he doesn't want because he's got this combat experience. Lon, genetic modification, she's ostracized, all these things, you know? Those two, among them, probably, want to forget some things from time to time.
Yeah, for sure.
And then the Enterprise, we find out, cleared the debris field and everyone got their memories back. And they alter their shields and they go back in to tractor the asteroid off the planet to permanently restore the Kalar memories.
Yeah, I haven't noticed that Ortega performs a Riker maneuver, but I guess Riker technically performed a Ortega maneuver.
Oh, with the asteroid? The throwing the,
yeah, slinging, the slinging yeah. asteroids with your tractor beams and whatnot.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a popular move right now in Star Trek. Like, I saw a ship throw Ortega. Another ship at a ship yeah. in Picard yeah. this year.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, the Ortegas maneuver. And then we get this like voiceover from Ortegas who talks about how she's happy to be a pilot. And, you know, sometimes when you're doing the same thing every day, it can be easy to forget how awesome the thing you're doing is. And I feel like that resonated with me as a podcaster who has to come to the mic every single day. You know, I don't have it so bad.
Don't get to sling asteroids every day. But day in and day out, not too shabby mm-hmm. piloting this beast.
Yeah. And then the final scene is Pike apologizing to Captain Batel, and she takes him back.
Is this a popular opinion? Minutes. Unpopular opinion? I don't give a shit about Batel, and I want her to go away.
Wow.
I'm tired as on off and will they, won't they, and this, like, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel you a little bit.
Especially since the Unichin Riley episode, that was a clean break. I think it needed. I'm ready to move. I want a single captain of the Enterprise for a season.
Yeah, I think we'll get mostly that. I mean, her duties. He's manufacturing reasons for them to be together here, so he can apologize. He's pulling them off of their other missions, but like, I don't think we're gonna have a lot of time with them together.
How could they? They're fucking captains exactly. on different starship. Yeah, like their best case scenario is seeing each other a couple times a year.
Probably.
Yeah, it's just fucking rip the Band-Aid off, guys.
I think you'll get your wish. She'll be mostly sidelined, except for an episode or two.
You don't got that much time left until you get the permanent wheelchair, man. Just
True.
Take the navigator stone and hold it and tell you what's your heart actually to. But I guess he's really in love with her because that's the one thing that mm-hmm. stuck with him through this experience. And when he got his memory back, he had this like overwhelm. So it's like it kind of makes sense. It's just like it just feels like I don't know. It just feels like an entanglement the show doesn't need.
I like her, but yeah, I don't know that I need every episode to contain this relationship between the two captains.
It's the same way with like Spock and T'Pring, you know? It's like she's mm-hmm. not on the Enterprise. They're, you know, not going to have, it's like, it's in another one of those entanglements that you can't revisit enough to make it like a vital part of the character.
Mm-hmm.
So like, what are we doing here? But I don't know. Maybe they got something really clever planned or something devastating planned.
We'll see. But that's it for the episode.
That is it. That's it for our thoughts. If you got some thoughts, you can send it in to StarTrek@baldmove.com. Once again, that's StarTrek@baldmove.com. That's the email address you use if you'd like to send in any feedback to the show, and we will consider it when we get a chance. There's also, if you'd like to follow our subspace communications on Twitter, twitter.com/baldmove, to find out what we're doing on a week-to-week basis. And you can also visit our site at baldmove.com. We got lots of cool stuff coming down the pike. Pardon the pun. We got Justified coming back in a couple weeks. We got, speaking of science fiction nerdery of the highest caliber, we got probably by the time you're hearing this, Foundation Season 2 will be out on Apple TV Plus. Great high concept science fiction show. Really looking forward to that season two. Tons of stuff always going on. Oppenheimer's coming up real soon for a movie review. Tons of stuff at baldmove.com. And you can support us, support.baldmove.com, to help keep us in the podcast business. And you get some cool perks for yourself. Ad-free feeds, exclusive bonus audio and video content. Check it out, support.baldmove.com. We could use your help. That's going to do it for this week. We'll be back next week with the next episode 5. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.